So today we are extremely blessed with this unlimitedly auspicious opportunity to study the words of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter number 2, Divinity and Divine Service, text number 8. Dharmakshvanushtitak pumsam Vishvakshena katasuyaha Notpada yadi yadi ratim Shramma eva hi kevalam. The occupational duties, rather the occupational activities, a man performs according to his own position are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the personality of Godhead. Purport. There are different occupational activities in terms of man's different conceptions of life. To the gross materialist, who cannot see anything beyond the gross material body, there is nothing but the senses. Therefore, his occupational activities are limited to concentrated and extended selfishness. Concentrated selfishness centers around the personal body. This is generally seen amongst the lower animals. Extended selfishness is manifested in human society and centers around the family, society, community, nation, and world with a view to gross bodily comfort. Above these gross materialists are the mental speculators who hover aloft in the mental spheres, and their occupational duties involve making poetry and philosophy, or propagating some ism with the same aim of selfishness, limited to the body and the mind. But above the body and mind is the dormant spirit soul, whose absence from the body makes the whole range of bodily and mental selfishness completely null and void. But less intelligent people have no information of the needs of the spirit soul. Because foolish people have no information of the soul and how it is beyond the purview of the body and mind, they are not satisfied in the performance of their occupational duties. The question of the satisfaction of the self is raised herein. The self is beyond the gross body and subtle mind. He is the potent active principle of the body and mind. Without knowing the need of the dormant soul, one cannot be happy simply with emolument of the body and mind. The body and the mind are but superfluous outer coverings of the spirit soul. The spirit soul's needs must be fulfilled. Simply by cleansing the cage of the bird, one does not satisfy the bird. One must actually know the needs of the bird himself. The need of the spirit soul is that he wants to get out of the limited sphere of material bondage and fulfill his desire for complete freedom. He wants to get out of the covered walls of the greater universe. He wants to see the free light in the spirit. That complete freedom is achieved when he meets the complete spirit, the personality of Godhead. There is a dormant affection for God within everyone. Spiritual existence is manifested through the gross body and mind in the form of perverted affection for gross and subtle matter. Therefore, we have to engage ourselves in occupational engagements that will evoke our divine consciousness. This is possible only by hearing and chanting the divine activities of the Supreme Lord and any occupational activity which does not help one to achieve attachment for hearing and chanting the transcendental message of Godhead is said herein to be simply a waste of time. This is because other occupational activities, duties, whatever ism they belong to, cannot give liberation to the soul. Even the activities of a salvationist are considered to be useless because of their failure to pick up the fountainhead of all liberties. The gross materialist can practically see that his material gain is limited only to time and space, either in this world or in the other. Even if he goes up to Svarga Loka, he will find no permanent abode for his hankering soul. The hankering soul must be satisfied by the perfect scientific process of perfect devotional service. Om Jnana Timanandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shigaravenam. So this is actually the ultimate purport. This says everything in such a perfect, beautiful, scientific, poetic, and deeply philosophical way. If we can simply understand this one purport perfectly and apply this one purport perfectly, then we will achieve the supreme perfection of existence. So, it is worth reading and discussing this purport. Actually, there's nothing more important than to read and discuss this particular purport. So many incredibly powerful points Prabhupada is making here. One is, there's two types of selfishness. There's concentrated and extended. Everyone can understand concentrated selfishness. It's someone who's just a gross pig, who just thinks about themselves only. They don't care about anyone else. Everyone can recognize that's a miserly person. That's not good. However, the other one, extended selfishness, is thought to be very glorious and magnanimous and wonderful. But actually, it is simply another version of selfishness. Someone thinks, well, you know, I serve my family. I'm completely devoted to my family. But what does that mean? It means, because my family gratifies my senses, therefore I gratify their senses. It's a business deal. I gratify you, you gratify me. We may extend that out to our community or even our nation. That's another example. It's considered very glorious to sacrifice your life for the nation. You see, he was a great nationalist. He gave everything for the nation. He's considered a great hero. They make statues of him. You see, he did everything for the nation. But, again, it was a false material conception that I am American, or I am Russian, or I am a Frenchman. You see, I am Indian. You see. It's not spiritual. Serving the nation is not spiritual, although sometimes they want to claim, oh, you're a great spiritualist because you serve the nation. But that's also selfishness. Yes, America is great. I'm an American, therefore I am great. And therefore I serve America, and this way I serve myself because I'm an American and America is great, and I'm great because I'm an American. Therefore, my whole life is dedicated to serve America. You see? It's just another way of serving myself, actually. You understand? So these things are more subtle than people glorify, oh, he's so dedicated, selfless person, but actually it's another form of selfishness. Until we actually come to the platform of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we remain selfish because we're serving our false conception of the self on some level. On some level, we're serving it. So if we actually want to come to some activities which are going to benefit us, actually benefit us, we have to come beyond all of these levels of concentrated or extended selfishness and come to the point of pure devotional service. This is a very important thing to understand. Very, very important thing to understand. So poetically, Prabhupada is saying, explaining it here. The body and mind is the above the body and mind is the dormant spirit soul, whose absence from the body makes the whole range of bodily and mental selfishness null and void. Now, you may ask questions, but I thought the spirit soul was present. How Prabhupada can say the spirit soul is absent from the body? Otherwise, how does the body have life? What does Prabhupada mean when he says the dormant spirit soul whose absence from the body? Of course, the spirit soul does become absent from the body at the time of death. And then all that energy you put into that, you know, that concentrated and or extended selfishness, then the result is nothing. Like all, so many great famous personalities in the history of the world, where are they now? They have vanished into oblivion. You see, where is Gandhiji now? Where is Napoleon? Where is George Washington? Where are all these big names? Or, you know, even where is John Lennon, the Beatle? Where are these people? The laws of karma, who knows? They could be a dog, they could be a germ. So all of the big activities they did, they made them so famous and prominent in different ways. It's just null and void. They're nowhere. It was temporary. It came and it went. But there's another way of looking at this. This is what it was coming to my mind by looking at this. The spirit soul is virtually absent. Of course, not physically, the spirit soul is situated in the body. But he's virtually absent for a person who's not Krishna conscious because, you know, he's not manifest. The spiritual nature is not manifested. It's dormant, as Prabhupada says, dormant spirit soul. So that's, so dormancy is a virtual absence. So even though the soul is present in the materialistic person, the selfish, either concentratedly or extendedly selfish person, even though he is present, he is virtually absent by dint of his not doing anything spiritual. He has virtually killed his spiritual identity. The term atmahana, killer of the soul, has two meanings. It literally means someone who kills animals, or someone who eats meat. What is it? Atmaha?
Atmahatya.
Huh?
Atmahatya.
Yeah, there's different ways that Prabhupada says it, I think. But the one who does not awaken his dormant spiritual identity, they are also considered a killer of the soul. So that's one interesting way of looking at it when Papa talks about the absence from the body. It can mean virtual death by not being Krishna conscious, or it can mean actual death when the spirit soul does in fact leave the body. In either case, whether you are dead, you know, actually dead by leaving the body, or you're virtually dead by not being Krishna conscious, in either case, the whole range of bodily and mentally selfishness is completely null and void. In either case, it's the same thing. And as Prabhupada points out, and as actually we were studying in the previous verse, that people aren't satisfied. The fact is they're not. People are frustrated. They don't know who they are. They don't know how to be who they are. All they're trying to do is engage in external activities of economic development and sense gratification. So there's no wonder that people are frustrated and unhappy. They're not even connected with their actual identity. They're just going on in some illusory, you know, idea that by gratifying the senses very nicely that one can be happy. But nothing could be further from the truth. Nothing could be further from the truth. Without knowing the need of the dormant soul, one cannot be happy simply with emolument of the body and the mind. Simply by satisfying, engaging in the service of your body and mind, which is all people do. They don't do anything more than that. There's no way they can be happy. That's why here in Australia, for example, we were hearing a statistic yesterday that among Australian teenagers, this is the third highest suicide rate in the entire world. They're so unhappy in this country, in spite of all their material opulence here, compared to India, for example. We know the stark difference in the economic development here versus India.
Not only economic development here, that youths are provided with all kinds of things. Even when they get out of college, they live on the money that government gives them.
Yeah. There's so much material facility here to live comfortably and happily with all your material needs satisfied. And then, so why they have such a high suicide rate? It confirms what Prabhupada is saying. The body and mind are but superfluous outer coverings of the spirit soul. So we're doing all this service for the body and mind, but we're neglecting the actual needs of the soul within. And what does that need? Prabhupada explains he wants to get out of the limited sphere of material bondage and fulfill his desire for complete freedom. We don't want, right now we are in jail. We are incarcerated within this body and mind, actually. We're imprisoned because of our envious attitude against the Lord. We were put in this prison of the material body and the material mind. If you in a prison, you may be shifted from cell to cell, but yet you remain within the prison. You see, you spend some time in this cell, and they transfer you to a different cell. So, but you still remain within the same prison. So, the same prison is the mind, and the different cells are the different bodies. So, the 8,400,000 species; those are the different bodies, different cells. So the prison remains the same. Your material, that subtle body, the mind, that stays with you. That is the prison that you were put in. Just like there's many different prisons in the U.S. You know, there's San Quentin, Sing Sing, El Reno, many different famous federal penitentiaries. So you have, your mind is a penitentiary. And you're stuck in that one penitentiary the whole time you're in the material world. The same mind is there. Within that penitentiary, however, you go through millions of different cells. Sometimes you're sometimes you're Lord Brahma, sometimes you're Indra, sometimes you're Indagopa, sometimes you're a dog, sometimes magpie. Is it? So that's the different cells within the prison and your particular prison that you've been assigned to. As Prabhupada aptly states, he wants to get out of the covered walls of the greater universe. But how can that be understood? Well, there are two conceptions of the universe. This universe we are in is the smaller universe, the lesser universe. In other words, there's millions and billions of material universes. You see? Mm. within the material world, there's millions and billions of universes. But the greater universe is this whole conglomeration of universes. So this desire for space travel is actually a manifestation of our desire to escape not only this particular universe that we're in now, but to escape the greater universe of the material existence, and it penetrated into the Parivyama. The desire for space travel is actually a manifestation of that desire. We want to penetrate the coverings of the greater universe and enter into the Parivyama, the spiritual sky.
Isn't that for the individual soul, this is also the sort of like a universe that the soul wants to get out of this material body? Can you understand that way?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The material world or material universe is for all the individual souls, but per each individual soul,
it's like a universe, but generally, I mean, we poetically could say, but it's not generally stated like that.
I know.
Yeah.
It's better just for understanding myself.
It's like a little universe, your body.
Because that's also material covering of.
It's a complete body. Unit.
Yes.
You know, it's like we say a complete unit in the Shesha Upanishad.
Yes.
It's like that, but it's generally not called
that.
We
don't speak like that, but it is
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it's like that. So, Prabhupada says he wants to see the free light in the spirit. What does that mean, free light? Does that mean, well, like this light we have to pay the utility company? Does it mean a light where there's no free? It's free? Well, the sunlight is free. So this is not the free light. What does that mean, to see the free light? You see? It's an interesting question. What does it mean? He wants to see the free light and the spirit. Well, the thing is, right now, we're not seeing the spirit, we're only seeing matter. In other words, you can't even see, we don't even see each other. You see? We only see the coverings, we don't actually see, I'm not actually seeing you, you see? We're not seeing the spirit, we're seeing matter, we're seeing gross matter. So the free light here obviously refers to the light of the spiritual world. That's the free light. This light of the material world is not free. In the sense, it doesn't refer to monetary expenditure necessary to have it, but it refers to liberative, in that sense, free. Liberated light. Complete freedom is achieved when he meets the complete spirit. Again, Prabhupada is jumping back to the theme of the invocation mantra. He's reminding us of the invocation mantra of the Shesha Upanishad. Complete, you know, so many complete units emanate from the complete whole. Yeah, Om Purnama Daha Purnanam. So the complete freedom is achieved when he meets the complete spirit. And then a nice point here, there's a dormant affection for God within everyone. In other words, everyone has love of God within their heart. Everyone is actually a pure devotee, and dormant, but it's dormant, that's all. It's simply dormant. So then the conclusion is, since you have pure love of God within your heart and it's dormant right now, then you have to do something to wake it up. That's all. It's common sense. If you're suffering right now in the time and space dimension and you're actually a liberated being beyond time and space who's purely absorbed in love of God, that's your actual identity, and it's just sleeping right now, then the obvious thing is, well, what can I do to wake it up? What can I do to wake it up? That's the obvious conclusion. And that is this process of Krishna consciousness. we take shelter of these wonderful instructions given by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. We take shelter of that wonderful sangha of persons who are dedicating their lives to follow the instructions of Srila Prabhupada. What is that sangha called? The International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So in this way our lives will become perfect and we will see the free light in the Spirit. Any questions?
The concept of null and void, which you explained.
Yeah. What is that, null and void?
In the previous page. End of second paragraph, first paragraph.
You want a further explanation of null and void? What are you asking?
Like for that concept, you said the activities or the occupational activities that one does, it becomes null and void when the spirit soul leaves the body. But it is actually null.
The result is nothing. It's nowhere.
But actually, it is null and void even when the spirit soul is in body, because if a person does
That's
not
right.
know his spirit soul, then he is not doing any activity for himself. He is doing his activity for his covering.
That's right.
Is that correct?
Yeah, as long as you're acting on the platform of concentrated or extended selfishness, all of your activities are actually null and void. They're nowhere. You're accomplishing nothing by selfish activity. Absolutely nothing. Not accomplishing anything. You may be glorified by, you know, if you're extendedly selfish, you may be glorified, but it's still null and void. You haven't accomplished anything. You're going nowhere in grand style. That's a big title. Oh, he's a great humanitarian. He's a great philanthropist. Simply nowhere. That old Beatles song, he's a nowhere man, sitting in his nowhere man. He's a real nowhere man, sitting in his nowhere land, making all of his nowhere plans. Null and void. The whole world is just filled up with these nowhere men. You see? They're nowhere. And Prabhupada is giving the actual directions how the nowhere man can become somebody, something significant, something tangible, liberated being. Yes. You had some point?
Yes, but at least they accrue some karma to come back and suffer a little bit.
Yeah, you think that's something significant? Hmm? You think that's something worthwhile? To remain in prison? In the miserable prison state, they've engaged in some activities which entangles them further in prison life. Is that very significant then?
Because the prison life sometimes is very wonderful. Nowadays it's taking ordinary prisons also. They find it so wonderful in the prison, they get everything free. So they do those things and come back. Nobody wants to remain in the prison.
Actually, they don't like the prison. They want to get out. They like the life of criminal, but they don't. They want to be a free criminal, not a captured criminal. They try to escape prison. They will risk their lives even to escape prison.
There are some who escape like that, but there are.
They all want to escape.
There are prisoners who stays, who goes out and does the criminal activity and comes back again. For no reason, they go out and do it and come back again because the prison life is so good.
No, they don't want to get caught.
They get caught.
They get caught, but they try to avoid getting caught.
Some of them, they do.
Well, some of them, some may be a fool, yes.
Yeah. Because so much luxury which they cannot get it outside, you see.
Prison life is miserable, let me tell you.
I know, some prisons are, but some prisons they are giving computers and this and that, you know, so many things, like demigods.
People in the prisons are miserable, they want out. They really do. I used to preach in the prisons, they want out. They're not happy, though. They want out. They risk their lives to escape.
Sometimes they do that.
No.
But there are people. I've seen some people like that too.
Yeah.
Who maybe
now there is one case of one. One man, he was enjoying prison life, and they offered to release him. He said that he actually wanted to stay. He didn't want to leave. Sometimes that's true. But generally, they want out. They want to get out of the prison.
Because the attachment for the outside prison, greater prison.
Because the sense gratification is very limited in the prison. It's very austere life. Prison life is very austere. They want to have unlimited sense enjoyment. So, you know, illicit sex, meeting, intoxication, and gambling.
But they want to stay in the greater prison?
Yeah. That's right. Any other questions? Yeah.
Just a different question relating to Srila Prabhupada often talks about investing our thinking, feeling, and willing, like Bhishmadev does in his prayers.
Like
Bhishmadev does in his prayers, he says, "Let me now invest my thinking, feeling, and willing in Krishna." And I was trying to understand, why is it broken up in what is the difference between those three components? And
yes, well, this is called Vedic psychology. There are four actually dimensions. It's very significant. I don't know if the Western psychologists have understood this, but they have. In Vedic psychology, we have thinking, feeling, willing, and acting. Four different phases. Whatever you think about, you keep thinking about it, you know. Jhayato vishyon pung san vishvak. What is that?
Sangat
sanjayat. What does that mean? It's saying that while contemplating the objects of the senses, the person develops attachment for them. So keep thinking about something, even if you're not attached to it, you just think, well, it's interesting to think about it. You start thinking about something, and then you start feeling like doing that thing. Someone may start thinking, well, sex life. Start meditating on sex life, for example, in the mind. Even though they didn't feel like having sex, they started thinking about it. Or maybe, you know, maybe they opened, their email came in, and some porno email came in, some picture was there, and they just happened to see it, and they started thinking about that picture. So they start thinking about it, and then all of a sudden they start feeling sexually aroused, you see. And then they make a decision, well, I'm going to find a prostitute, you know, something like that. You know, where's a prostitute available in New York City? And they have illicit sexual activity. So it all begins with thinking. there's an old saying, nip it in the bud. You know, just when it's starting, that's when you have to stop it right there. As soon as you see the mind is contemplating some material object, even you're not any feeling to even do that thing, but even if the mind is just playing around by thinking about it, you have to stop it right there. This is why it's important to understand thinking, feeling, willing, and acting. It's a progression. In previous ages, if you thought about something, you would get the reaction of having done it. If you thought of doing some sinful thing, even the thought of it entered your mind, you get the reaction of having committed that sinful act. In the Kali Yuga, it is not so, but that doesn't mean it's okay to think about it. Because if we do think about some sinful activity, then after some time we'll feel like doing it, and then we will make a decision that I will do it, and then we will actually do it. So it's very important to understand what thinking, feeling, willing, and acting. And as far as engaging all of your thinking, feeling, and willing in the service of Krishna. It means you have to, on all levels of your psyche, every level, you have to be dovetailed with Krishna perfectly. That's the meaning. Everything has to, on all levels, you have to be connected with Krishna. You're always thinking Krishna consciously, you're always feeling in a Krishna conscious way about everything, you're always willing, and naturally then you'll always be acting in Krishna consciousness also. On all four different psychological levels, we have to be connected with Krishna perfectly. That's pure bhakti. Questions, Mark?
Can you
elaborate on the four stages? Like in one of your lectures, you had explained unconscious ignorance, then conscious ignorance, then.
This will be the last question. There's four different degrees of competency, incompetency. There's unconscious incompetence, conscious incompetence, conscious competence, and unconscious competence. The lowest stage is when you're unconsciously incompetent. You're doing everything in the world wrong, but you don't know what you are. You think you're doing okay. I'm fine, I'm okay. You don't realize you're doing so many things that are wrong. Unconscious incompetence. If one hears from Vaishnavas, from Guru, from reads from Prabhupada's books, Shastra, then one understands that actually I'm doing so many things wrong. So many things I'm doing wrong. So that's good, you made some progress. Now you're consciously incompetent. Even though it's embarrassing, still you've made progress because now there's some hope. At least you know you're incompetent now. And then by taking up the process of sadhana bhakti under the guidance of Guru, Vaishnavas, and Prabhupada's books, the Shastra, then what happens is you gradually become competent. It's called sadhana bhakti. You gradually become fixed. Your thoughts, your thinking, feeling, willing, acting, gradually becomes fixed in nicely, dovetailed in Krishna's service. So now you're consciously competent. And then you become so expert and so purified that you actually achieve the Raganuga platform of spontaneous love. And then you become competent even without being conscious of it. Just automatically competent. Just like when you drive your car, you don't think, well, I have to take my foot now and push down on the accelerator. You don't think that way. It just happens. You just think, speed up, and it happens. You don't think, my foot on the accelerator has to be pushed down. You don't think that way. You become unconsciously competent driver.
Okay. It's just like when I'm learning the vehicle, I'm consciously
competent. Or incompetent, depending. So, is that it? We'll stop here. Gantaraj, Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.
I need to take some rest too.